We get the second hour underway this afternoon by getting on board the telephone line and welcoming in a Pulitzer Prize winning author of tremendous books like My Name is Lucy Barton, The Burgess Boys, Abide With Me, and her brand new book that is so good, Tell Me Everything. We are happy to be joined by Elizabeth Stroud. Elizabeth, welcome back.
Hi, thank you. It's lovely to be speaking with you again.
Oh my goodness, the book was so wonderful, and I try to do this. I didn't know anything about it going in, and then what a wonderful treat to meet characters that felt like old friends.
Yeah, I'm so glad. Thank you. That's nice.
One of the things, Elizabeth, that I have always admired about your writing, and it is so evident in this book, is that you give us characters, and we want to be empathetic. We want to like everybody as we meet them. And no matter what their flaws are, no matter what else, when the book is over, I say to myself, I really wish I knew those people. And then I have to remind myself that they're fictional characters.
I know, that's so funny. I have to remind myself as well, because I feel like I've known them so long and so well over the years that, you know, I have to remember, I made these people up.
Very few authors have been successful at creating, I don't want to say a cast of characters, I want to say a menagerie of characters, and having them appear in different books. I mean, not just the way that the characters in Olive and in Olive Again recur in linked stories, but that someone comes from one novel to another novel, and you feel like, oh, good, I'm learning the next thing I want to know. And I know you said that you don't necessarily write the books in chronological order. I'm wondering how it is you keep all that together.
You know, it's interesting. I feel like these few main characters, you know, like Bob Burgess and Lucy and Olive and, you know, even Pam and Margaret, I mean, these few characters, I feel like I've known them now for so long that they're really deeply entrenched in me. And so when I go forward with them, and then, you know, eventually I do look back and I think, okay, right, I had it right. This is where they would be right now. So it's really just a matter of feeling like I know them so well that I can continue to work with them.
Well, what's wonderful is there are no minor characters in this book.
Yeah.
And people that we meet, like a Matt Beach, who you think you know and becomes so well-developed and changes so much over the course of the book.
Yeah, darling Matt Beach, right, right. Yeah. Right. Well, there is no small character in my mind, you know, ever. So
yeah.
If they're there for a reason. But thank you.
That was going to be my next point. Is that none of your characters are ever props. They're not there for the lazy way out to advance the narrative in some way. What I found remarkable in Tell Me Everything is that it's the first novel I've read, and I've read novels that have tried to make this point, that everybody has a story. There's a story behind everything, and you unlocked that.
Right. You know, it's interesting because once I wrote that book, I look around and I realize, wow, everybody does have a story, which obviously I was trying to explain as I was writing it. But having written it now, it's like it feels more profound to me. It's like everybody has a story, and most of those stories are unrecorded.
Yes.
And boy, do you reel us in with the first story in the book that Olive shares with Lucy. And then it's a series of wonderful stories. But I also love the fact that not everybody responds the same way. Like Olive sometimes a little bit bored with some people's stories.
I know. And Lucy, I actually thought that was quite funny because Lucy is supposed to be a storyteller and Olive is not very impressed with her story. I just got a kick out of that. That's all.
It's like it's impossible for me not to just love Olive in this book, in the way that she has this wisdom, and she's suffered plenty. Things aren't working out perfectly in her oldest of age, but you can't throw the BS by her.
Precisely. No, she's still Olive. She knows what she knows. We're talking a lot more than Suzanne knows.
We're talking with Elizabeth Stroud about her new book, Tell Me Everything. Bob and Jim's story, really, and I don't want to give too much away, but what had happened in their past, it's so powerful. And, you know, it makes us all wonder a little bit about the stories that we've been told about our lives, because, again, they are stories that have been told and sometimes not always accurate.
But that's so interesting. You're exactly right. And again, having finished the book, I've begun to look around and I realized, oh, right, that's what that person is always talking about, you know, his history. So that's his narrative. And yet I happen to know that's not exactly true. As far as I know, it's not exactly true, but he thinks so. You know, whatever. I'm just saying it's fascinating how people, they do have their narratives. They seem to follow them. And yet they're not always accurate, which is fine, you know.
Well, it inspired a conversation I had with an old friend, and we were talking about that very idea of stories, and I came to realize from reading the book that there are stories I've told that I experienced, right, and I'm not sure exactly how valid they are, because I've been known to embellish a little along the way, and over time I've lost in the mists of time exactly what might have happened.
Right, exactly. Oh, well, that's fine.
as I was reading it, I was reminded of a friend of mine who used to say all the time when we were on a volunteer fire department together and there'd be an argument about something, and he would say, I just want to point out there's three sides to this story, yours, mine, and the truth.
That's so interesting.
And yeah. I thought about that a lot with Olive remembering things. And there were times you could tell that her mental acuity was just right there. She remembered exactly what was going on. And then there were other times when she was sort of talking to Lucy and you weren't really sure that either of them was telling you exactly.
Exactly. Precisely. Because, you know, I mean, what is the truth? Who knows what the truth is? I mean, in any sense.
It's also a wonderful reminder throughout the book of the importance of community, of friendship, and connection.
Yeah. Exactly. Precisely. Because, you know, I mean, I think the narrator says at one point, who in the world does not want to be heard? And when I wrote that, I realized, oh, that's so true, because to be heard is to be seen. Mm-hmm. And if you can actually really have your words received by somebody, you know, even just briefly, it makes you feel validated. It makes you feel like, oh, there I am. Okay. That's all I needed.
I was teaching a class at a local high school today where I used to teach, or one of my pay it forward things. And I said to them about poetry and fiction, I said, you have to think of it as a conversation with your reader, it's a communication skill as much as it is anything else. And I think the kids were very surprised by that until
that's a great thing to tell them. Yeah, go on. Sorry.
Yeah, no. I said to them, if you read a poem and it makes you feel stupid and you can't understand it and you try really hard to read it and really hard to figure it out, that's just a bad poem. Move on. Because the poet's not communicating with you. Your characters communicate with me. I want to hang out with Bob Burgess. I want to light his cigarette when he's snaking it. I want to talk to him and say, man, you know, a lot of this is so hard to understand. And I think when you create characters like that for the reader, I mean, it does something for me that a lot of contemporary fiction doesn't do. It allows me to use my imagination in a way that if I can't relate to the character, I can't see them, I can't envision them, I don't really understand them, I don't have that same conversation with them.
Right. You know, I think it's very interesting what you were telling your students, because I believe in that totally. I have always thought, at least for myself, that my writing is a form of communication, and I'm always keeping the reader in mind. So I have always, always, always been interested in getting something from my living mind to another living mind. You know, so there's always that dance involved and that reader involved, and I don't know, I'm not sure if all writers feel that or not, but I do very much. So I think I'm so glad you told your students that.
Well, that's what I felt about it. Since I read Amy and Isabel, I thought to myself, if someone said, well, this is a book about this, will you be interested in reading it? I go, well, yeah, I might like. Once I read one of your books, I didn't care what the title was of anything else, right? I wanted to read the next one, because I always felt like we were having a conversation.
I'm so glad.
And as a writer, to me, I mean, that's what I try and try and do is have a conversation with the reader rather than tell the reader what they ought to be thinking or like that.
Right. It's just like, you know, okay, reader, come with me and I'll show you something and it will be okay. But do come with me, you know, and that's how I've always approached my work. And so I'm glad to hear that you told your students that.
Well, it's the peek behind the curtain. You know, it's the peek behind the curtain. I think of Margaret and Bob, the sort of the peek behind the curtain to see what's really going on there. And when Olive uses the word linchpin, I almost fell over. I thought, wow, that's the perfect word. That's what Twain meant, that the perfect word is the difference between lightning and a lightning bug. That's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely.
Does it make the work easier when you know the voice of some of these characters so well?
You know, that's an interesting question because it's really the voice of the narrator, especially in this book. This was a different kind of narrator for me, and the narrator had to be very, very large, with a very large view, and yet also very particularly intimate with the reader because there was so much going on and didn't want the reader to be lost. So the narrator had to kind of sort of swoop down and talk to the reader directly at times. And so it's really the narrator's voice that once I can find that, I can do it. And then the characters themselves, like I said before, I just feel like I know them so well at this point that I'm able to, you know, get into them as much as I need the narrator to get into them.
I remember the last time you were on, we talked about this, and I'm always fascinated by your ability to do omniscient narration. That virtually most people don't even try it. And most people who do try it, it fails. How did you develop a knack for that? Did it come naturally or did you have to really think about that?
Yeah, I think I learned, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think I learned an awful lot writing Amy and Isabel because I realized that as I wrote that book, I learned and I would think of it as a camera. And I would think, okay, I'm holding the camera far away from the earth right now, and I'm seeing the sun and the moon, you know, and the stars and the field, and now the camera's going to swoop down closer and closer and closer, and then it's going to go into Isabel's head, and then we're going to swoop the camera back, and then we're going to move over and go into Amy's head. And that's how I envisioned it as I was writing that book. And I learned a lot by writing that book and by thinking in those terms.
Obviously, the characters are wonderful and so fully developed, but also your descriptions of the change of seasons here in Maine are so powerful.
Yeah, well, I know Maine like the back of my hand.
Rich and I were talking before the show, and that people will talk about how the books are set in Maine, but, well, obviously, or Amgash, Illinois, but you... Your writing transcends place in a way that a lot of New England writers don't do. It becomes, this is a Massachusetts writer. This is a Maine writer. Yes, you live in New York and you live in Maine. But if we didn't know that Crosby was in Maine and you told me it was on the coast of Oregon, you know, the whole narrative would still work.
I hope so. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And I hope and think that's because I'm writing truthful sentences about these people so that, you know, when you write a truthful sentence, it can hopefully last a bit and become larger than the place and the people that you're talking about.
You've had books that have gone on to become films, Broadway shows. Mm-hmm. Is it difficult to let someone else take control of those characters?
Well, I choose, you know, I was very careful and happy that Frances McDormand wanted to do that because she's Frances McDormand and Richard Jenkins is so wonderful. And then also with Laura Linney, I mean, I wouldn't have just handed it over to anybody, but I just love her. And so it wasn't hard for me in those situations to hand it over to them. And then one stands back and it's odd. It's very interesting because it's almost like I didn't really have anything to do with it because in a way I didn't, you know, either film or stage, it becomes a very different thing, which is fascinating and great.
Yeah. I'm one of the few people I know who writes plays who really loves actors. And yeah. the reason I really love actors is they can take what I've done and make it so much better. And I remember watching Frances McDormand become Olive, and I thought at first, well, I think of B. Arthur when I think of
Then
you get Frances McDormand, one of the most compelling faces in the contemporary film world, I think, and watched her make that character not only her own, but make me understand the other characters better in relation to the way that she portrayed Olive. That had to be just a great thrill.
Right. It was. It was a wonder. I mean, I remember the first time I actually saw it, and I was like, oh, wow. And I also felt, phew, because I had no idea what they were doing. And then there it was.
I read somewhere that you said that these characters in Tell Me Everything are probably about to be retired, they're not.
I think so.
And that you had a new project underway. Is that something you can or want to talk about, or?
I'm not going to talk about it. I already said much more than I usually do about new work. But anyway, it's something entirely different, but I'm not sure. I'm just not sure. So I don't think I should talk about it.
Well, no, that's fine. That's fine. No, that's fine. I respect that.
Sorry.
Completely.
Yeah,
but no, wherever you take us, whoever you introduce us to, we'll be along for the ride.
We'll be along for the ride. You know, it's
thank you.
It's funny. I gave I lent my copy of Abide With Me to a recently retired minister. And I said, and I know him well. He's a very, very bright, very wonderful man. And I said, I want you to tell me when this is all over what it's like to know all those secrets.
Right.
And we talked, and this was, I say recently, it was about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I don't know what her experience with people in the clergy is, but she got that just right. He said, we go around and we know things that we can't talk about. We can't share them with anybody. There's no one to whom we can say that. Anything. He said, that makes us isolated a lot of the time.
Yeah. Exactly. And when I was writing that book, I talked to every single minister that would talk to me. And the older ones were especially helpful because that book obviously takes place, you know, back in the very late 50s. But they were so helpful. And nobody ever actually said to me what that man said to you. But I got the sense that this is a lonely job at times. It can be a very lonely job.
And that's
so I'm glad to hear that.
And that's why I was so impressed with Bob and taking on the case, because yes, he would have Jim to sound off, and he does at some point talk to him about it. But it was for me, it was like, if he takes this on, he's taking on a very lonely, perhaps socially dangerous thing to do, but he's Bob Burgess. So he does it.
I know. Oh, thank you for getting Bob. He's just Bob. Yeah. He's just Bob. He can't help it. But you're absolutely right. He was taking on a possibly very loaded thing.
Well, we all need a Bob Burgess in our lives, I would say.
We sure do.
Well, the book is called Tell Me Everything, the latest from Elizabeth Strout. It is, as always, a wonderful read, unforgettable characters, some that you know already, and we'll get to know even better through this story. And we learn once again that we've all got our stories. Elizabeth, thank you so much for being with us again today.
Thank you so, so much. It was lovely to be able to talk to you again. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Bye-bye.
That's Elizabeth Strout with us here on Downtown.